Hello and welcome to the Vancouver Tech Podcast. My name is James.
And I'm Drew.
How's it going, Drew?
Great. How are you, James?
Good, good. It's a nice day today. I'm pretty excited for the week coming up, as well as things that happened last week.
Yeah. What did you end up doing last week? Anything interesting?
Yeah, I went to, I have my TA training at Red Square. So I actually learned, I know that you spent a lot of time in education. The biggest thing I took away was that people have learning biases. You're a person that likes demos. You're a person that likes reading. You're a person that likes theoretical. You're a person that likes maybe video over audio or whatever. And I didn't realize that when you're teaching someone, you're applying your style of learning to them. And that was like, that just kind of blew my mind. I was like, oh, that totally makes sense. When you're trying to teach someone and you're like, this is how I learned. This is how you can learn too.
Right.
And you're trying to force them to learn, but it just doesn't click. And I was like, oh my God. It's like so many things just lit, like went up in my mind. It's like things that I'd done in the past where I was like trying to show someone something. They just didn't get it. I was just teaching them my style, which doesn't always make sense for people. Right. So I think that that was just one of those things that I was like, okay, great. That's I need to fix that.
It's pretty nice when it works the other way as well. Like if you had a particularly difficult time learning something, but then you figured it out and you see that somebody's having that same sort of difficulty, then applying your style or what you did to learn it can be a really good benefit. But yeah, that sounds pretty cool.
So I guess we also had the DevOps Day.
This past week
as well, which we missed plugging it, but I actually did watch the live stream a little bit and saw an interesting talk about getting more diversity in tech, which I thought was cool. One thing that I hadn't heard before that I thought was a good point was that it's not about taking down the people that are in power or whatever. Some people sort of take that opinion of that if they change the system, the people that got to the top will be, you know, toppled from their reign or whatever you want to call it.
Right.
But it was more about changing the way that you do business or develop your company or hiring your people so that you can change it, really. You're changing it from the bottom up, not from the top down.
Right.
That was interesting. And as I think the, you know, the world moves forward and, you know, maybe the second generation of these newer companies moves along and this new generation moves in, you'll definitely see a big difference in that sort of stuff.
That sounds pretty interesting. So where do you get the idea that people perceive a loss of power or toppling of current power structures?
It was something that the present presenter had sort of mentioned that, you know, there are people that are resistant to diversity or resistant to changing the way that they do things because they think that her, or the lady, she made this point that people are rewarded for having a dominant or male attitude in the business. And that's because of the way that everyone else has the same style. Like if you are aggressive, if you're, if you work super hard, if you stay up super late, like these types of attitudes are maybe geared more towards masculinity. And it maybe doesn't work when you apply that to someone that's a feminine style of person, whether that's male or female, it doesn't really matter. But if you change the way that you're rewarding people, then you can actually change the way that your people work. And I actually heard another quote the other day saying that women coders actually tend to do a better job than male coders. They're more careful. They maybe take their time a little bit more. They just have a different style. It seems crazy to me that people wouldn't want to bring that up. But the thing is, there are different ways of working in the workplace. Some people are more quiet. Some people are loud. And that just actually changes the way that the system works. And if you have people that got there because they were a dominant personality or they had a particular style, telling them, hey, we're going to change the whole way we do the game. Now that type of attitude is going to be less effective. So it's like, oh, great. Now I'm going to lose my commission. I'm going to lose my, you know, my manager position. I'm going to lose my company now, or someone's going to come in and, you know,
It's kind of interesting when we look at things and we make decisions and say, this is ethical. This is the way we should be doing things. Where if, before, right, it, obviously, if previously somebody has been at the losing end of the stick, then you may see that somebody was at the winning end as well. And so changing that would affect both sides, right? And I guess you could imagine that there would be resistance from the people who don't want to change, right? Don't want to lose their power. But I don't know. I think that kind of ties into the whole idea of whether or not power is a good thing or administrative authority. over others is a good thing to assert.
Yeah, it can definitely be toxic for sure.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, let's jump into our meetups around town.
Meetups around town.
Cool. I had a crazy week.
Did you?
So yeah, I went to four different events.
Four events. That's pretty awesome. And one of them was one that you actually hosted, wasn't it?
Yeah, the PHP meetup. Yeah. So I'm a co-organizer of the PHP meetup with my buddy Arthur.
Awesome. And we'll talk about that in a moment. But what was the first one that you went to? I went out to the Git Help meetup on Monday. Mm-hmm. That was probably the first one of the week. I think it was from like 4:30 or 5. Yeah.
So I noticed Adam started adding zero tech as part of the title of the meetup.
Yeah, that was something not from last week. So that would be in the upcoming week.
Cool.
But so last week we had the Git Help meetup. It was in Decentral. It got moved over there from Moose's Down Under. So Decentral is pretty nice. Doesn't seem like you can order things there, but you can definitely go in and work on stuff. It's kind of like maybe your friend's mom's basement when you're a teenager or something.
Cool.
And so it's a pretty cool place. Yeah. We had about five people there.
Sure.
And Adam was helping someone with a merge gone wrong, and it looked pretty fun.
Scary.
Yeah. I happened to get in a pull request for some work during the meetup.
Oh, cool. Nice. Yeah. Nice. So you're actually working on some actual work stuff.
I was, yeah.
Yeah. Cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, the PHP meetup was Tuesday, so that was the next day.
Uh-huh.
And that was really fun. It was at CodeCore.
Was Thank that you, your Code first Core. Meetup of the week?
Yeah, because I had to miss Monday. Monday was that red training, so mm-hmm. I actually missed it. Took up the whole afternoon or the whole night. So yeah.
Cool. So the PHP meetup, tell us about it.
Yeah, it was really fun. We did. There was one about using another Docker presentation about using Docker with Laravel. Laravel is a framework for PHP, much like Rails.
Mm-hmm.
One of them was Baby's first open source contribution, which was Arthur. He was actually talking about like almost imposter syndrome and how to get over it,
mm-hmm.
and the fact that everyone an open source project is looking for help.
Yep.
So if you're helping them, you're not going to really get demonized. And, you know, the worst someone can do, really, I mean, this is like a anecdotal or contrived example. The worst someone can do is just say like no or not respond at all. Very mm-hmm. rarely people are mean, although it does happen. But he's saying you don't need to be as afraid to contribute, especially when it comes to things like documentation, spelling errors, maybe even fixing a variable name so that it makes mm-hmm. more sense.
I've been pretty surprised, like happily, at some of the comments I've gotten back when I've contributed to open source. I think my first contribution to like the Docker community, for example, there were some things I had no clue. And I was looking through the documentation, but so I kind of put in a pull request with like some half finished code and then a note, like, I wasn't really sure where to look for this. Where should I be looking? And someone replied with like, oh, check these documents out. And that was really helpful and really good. And then we ended up getting the issue resolved.
Nice. Yeah. And there was a guy talking about package or Composer, which is the package manager for PHP. He was mm-hmm. talking about hooking it up and like NPM, Composer can actually run scripts after things happen in the system. So after install, after update, after like a require, which is a way of like grabbing a package and adding it to your file.
Yep.
So you can actually run these arbitrary scripts after, which is kind of cool.
That's pretty interesting. So if you're an author of a package that Composer's using, what happens if you delete that? Can you delete it from the community? And then could somebody else add in a new one with the same name?
Yeah, so left pad style?
Yeah.
Yeah. Actually, I did hear a conversation about this. It is possible.
Mm-hmm.
The difference is, I think that people tend to, the difference is they are namespaced.
Mm-hmm.
So every package that you're going to download has a namespace and then the actual package itself.
Yep.
So I could have James Tudoyle left pad,
mm-hmm.
and then you could have Drew Bro left pad.
Mm-hmm.
All of them are namespaced, so you actually can't necessarily overwrite someone's, although maybe the owner of packages.org, which is the site, could like manually delete one and overwrite it with something else, which would be crazy. But that could happen with any package manager out there right now, whoever owns the admin rights to that manager could overwrite a package, but they are namespace, so you do avoid a lot of that problem.
Mm-hmm.
As well as Composer has a lot of the tricks that NPM has, where you can use Git repos, you can use symlinks,
mm-hmm.
You can use local repositories, you can use your own personal Git client, so you could use GitLab over SSH with keys,
mm-hmm.
and it'll still grab your stuff and still be able to search for your stuff, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, that sounds pretty cool.
Sounds pretty sweet.
And was that, so the whole meetup was about Composer?
No, there was Composer, Docker, the open source contributions, the getting a job in tech.
Wow, that does sound pretty cool.
Yeah, four different presentations.
So I decided to go out and try and check out some meetups that I hadn't been to before. And so I went over to the, the Vancouver Web Design Meetup. And that was over at Tinseltown, or International Village, at Kickstart Ventures. So if you haven't been there before, that's on the second floor. There's a cat cafe by there. Cafe. Yeah. And so, no, that was pretty good. I was pretty impressed with the quality of presentation. I thought it was quite good. It wasn't necessarily geared toward me as a more of a back-end developer. But it did seem to be quite geared toward people who maybe they're considering making a marketing site in WordPress or something for themselves and don't really have a lot of solid understanding. So I talked a little bit about like A/B testing. One of the presentations was, you know, some of the cool or some of the things that you definitely should be doing, like kind of common sense, the 8 most common sense things to do with your website. And if you're not doing, check yourself, yo.
Yeah. I'm sure there's one thing that you could learn, even if you knew some stuff.
Yeah.
Those 8 common sense things are always great.
Oh, for sure. And it was definitely well presented. I think it was a good meetup and I'm glad I attended.
Cool. Yeah. Yeah, I went to, we mentioned our last episode, we talked about a conversation about conversations, which was one we were kind of like, does this maybe fit? We weren't really sure.
So did you go out to that?
I did. Nice. Yeah, it was at Mobify.
Right?
Yeah, it was really cool. The presentation style was really loose. It was two presenters up at the front, the lady Stephanie who wrote the article and then the host, sorry I forget your name, but they were basically having a conversation one-on-one, but then eventually it sort of moved into the audience, like having a conversation with the two speakers, which was kind of cool. Like some people maybe don't like that format where they aren't necessarily observing, but everyone was participating, which was really cool. And we talked a lot about WeChat and chatbots and chat as UI, as well as some of the new things coming with devices. So there's apparently there's this new thing coming for browsers. And it's like this little dongle or this little hardware piece that you could put around your office, and it broadcasts any kind of link that you want, any URL that you want. And so you actually can come into this office and you get a little a subtle notification on your phone, much like the one you would get where if a Wi-Fi network shows up. It doesn't buzz you or anything like that. It just shows up as an option in your notification drawer, at least with Android. And you can actually just hit this thing and it'll go somewhere for you.
That's kind of cool. That'd be cool for tracking like product metrics, for example, in your company.
One of the examples that she used was like, oh, what if you have the Wi-Fi password that you need to share? So just go to a link. This link is maybe an SSL link or a crazy link that gets generated every day or something like that. And you just click on it and it just sends you to a page that says, here's the username, here's the password. So that's like a great way to share stuff without having to like write on a board or I know with
I don't know if that's a good use case though.
That was one that I thought was interesting. So like if you're in multiple offices.
So if you're offices, in this network, you have access to this network.
Yeah.
So why have
But if you have a rolling password, if you have a rolling password every day, like how I used to work at an office where every day the password would change. And so every morning I would go to the front desk and say, yeah, what's the password today? And they'd say it's this. That's to keep people from, it was one of these pay and rotate offices. So you'd had to go in there every day and get a new password because it was like booking by the day. So they wouldn't want someone to come in, you know, and not pay the proper fees to use the internet, or someone just shows up in the lobby and starts using the Wi-Fi. Like that's not really what the office is for, right? So a different, maybe not for a general use case, but for maybe one of these things that changes every day. Or even someone said like, oh, what if you had show notes for a presentation you're doing?
Yeah,
and then you could just see them. Or maybe you're sitting way at the back and you can't see the presentation. You could share a link. It goes right to the presentation. You don't have to worry about texting it, tweeting it, any of that junk. You just have this thing. It's there in the room. It's supported by the browser, not the OS. So as long as you have a browser that supports this feature, you can jump to these little links.
Apparently Wi-Fi or...
Well, I mean,
presumably Wi-Fi.
Whatever you want to use. I mean, it's just broadcasting.
Okay.
So I think you could be on your data network and then, you know, grab onto this link. Anyway, but that was really cool. It was fun.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And so I also made it out to the machine learning meetup on Thursday. And that was a combination, I think, of about 3 meetups, if I remember correctly. It was machine learning. It was data science. And I think it was also the Scala reading group. And that was really cool. So it was 2 talks. One was on service-oriented data pipelines. And that was interesting. This is, I think Yasha kind of gave a presentation. He said, yo, yeah, there's a lot of buzzword BS there, service-oriented data pipeline. But it was kind of cool the way that, I guess the way that they organize the way that they're collecting information and managing and filtering it. So that was pretty cool. I don't know if there's notes on the meetup page or not. I hope there is, but it was definitely recorded. And so hopefully you can see the video if you missed it. The other talk from Justin Long, an introduction to deep learning 4J in Scala.
Yeah.
That was pretty cool too. So they've come up with like an AI. I guess the story there was Justin was just sick of swiping left and right on Tinder and wanted to come up with a bot that could make the decisions for him. And it's kind of neat. There were a couple of sides to it where it might actually make a lot of sense. And when he started to explain how, you know, a lot of they had a female engineer, and she got on Tinder, and I think she was getting like 600 plus matches a day. Whoa. Like, it was just a lot of messages, a lot of people. Yeah. And how do you filter that? Well, then maybe you can put Bernie into this defensive mode where it's kind of, you know, it has an idea. Maybe it takes about 300 different pictures for it to learn what your preferences are physically or visually. And then it'll have some conversation as well,
yeah.
You know, so you can have your conversation. But in that respect, I think it wasn't as machine learning advanced as it will be eventually, but it was pretty interesting. So you have like some pre-programmed responses that you kind of get a conversation going, and if you get to a certain step, then it would send you an alert and be like, oh, that's you cool. Got to check this person out.
I think I did see that on like Hacker News or something. The guy built it so that it would recognize different... different faces and stuff like that, and you could, it would automatically find people that he might be attracted to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it was kind of an interesting, I guess an interesting set of problems that brings with it. Like, do you prefer people who smile more? Mm-hmm. Is that a thing? That
yeah.
just happened to be their picture
yeah.
or, you know, and it might be worth looking into. So there's definitely some show notes there on the, or some speaking notes there
cool.
on the machine learning meetup. And that was a great meetup. I think there were close to 200 people there.
Yeah, that's awesome. Mm-hmm. That's cool. Yeah. I went to the Van Hack meetup at Red.
Oh, nice. How's that?
It was cool. It was our friend Ilya, past guest on the show, interview guest. He actually... So Van Hack, for people that don't know, is a sort of a company that helps pair people that are, you know, maybe in South America, Brazil area, with companies and jobs in North America.
Mm-hmm.
And so one of the cool things I learned about Brazil is that there's such a gap between people with skills, like there's such a skill gap that a lot of these people that work at these companies mm-hmm. have like tons of experience in dozens of different things.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the guys was saying like, oh, you know, I've been doing this for like a decade or whatever. He could seriously say that he's very experienced in five different languages
mm-hmm.
because of the way that their business worked. They didn't hire people. They just retrained people that were already there. So these people end up being like superheroes because they have so many skills. And he said that actually hurt him in his interview because mm-hmm. people thought he was lying.
Yeah, yeah.
So he'd go to a job and be like, yeah, I have 6 years Python, 6 years JavaScript, 6 years PHP, and a bunch of, they did a lot of Java. So a bunch of Java mm-hmm. stuff. And like, and someone looks at that resume and they're like, this sounds like BS, right? How can someone have like all these different skills?
Why not
skills?
Just ask them? That
it's
sounds
weird.
Like a really easy thing to ask about. That's really good. If somebody has those kind of skills, I think I've interviewed people that say, you know, I've got these skills, I got these yeah. skills, and then you ask them about it, and either they know or they don't.
Yeah.
You know,
it seems like
it's usually pretty obvious, even with some fairly high level questions.
Yeah.
But not always. I guess some people do interview
yeah.
very well.
So I think the problem was the getting past the recruitment phase. So
right.
someone looks at that resume, they're like, "What? This is crazy." And the other thing is that, unfortunately, there is some stigma against people outside of the country, right?
Mm-hmm.
They're looking at, this is all in Brazil, right?
Mm-hmm.
So they're, like, looking at all this experience. It's in Brazil.
I see. So you're saying
you know,
that skepticism is coming from recruiters or HR.
Yeah, probably people that are
devs.
Getting past the phase. They had needing to get into the interview phase.
Mm-hmm,
but someone
mm-hmm.
may be looking at this resume and be like, someone just copy and pasted, like, every job post or
yeah,
every
that's
whatever,
too, that's
right?
too bad.
Hopefully
they'll be able to get on a more yeah. of a, you know, hop onto Skype and get into an interview
yeah,
phase
absolutely.
A little bit faster.
So these people were actually in Vancouver already. Some of them got here, like, a week ago. So
mm-hmm.
that was pretty cool. Then I went to Code and Coffee, which was fun. Bunch
nice.
Of different presentations. And that one actually is recorded. So you'll
mm-hmm.
actually find that on YouTube eventually.
Oh,
so,
awesome.
Yeah.
That sounds really cool. So you definitely had a busy week.
Yeah.
And we've got a busy week coming up.
Yeah. We're going to race through this real quick.
All right. So we've got the, as you mentioned before, so GitHelp, this is now kind of rebranded, changed over to GitHelp and Zero Tech. So we'll be looking forward to see what that's all about. On the other hand, you might notice it's starting at 4 p.m. Until 6 p.m. So it's getting a pretty early start. That's over at Decentral. Make sure to check it out if you want to know more about Zero Tech or if you want to get some help with Git.
Cool. And lately we've been sort of pitching ones that maybe fit, maybe don't. This one I actually found at the for the Vancouver Technology Leaders Meetup. Mm-hmm. The event is called Disruptive Performance, Managing Stress, and Your State of Mind. I know you just started a new job and you've been working crazy hours. Mm-hmm. So it might be kind of cool to find out how to manage all that stress, manage all that decision making. The guy here in the description says that we make about 35,000 decisions every day. Mm-hmm. So it's basically, how do you deal with that kind of stress in our type of environment? It is a ticketed event, $10.
Interesting. I don't believe in stress.
Oh, yeah.
That's just kidding. All right. So the information architecture and content strategy we have coming up at 6 p.m. That's over at Brain Station. It looks pretty interesting. That's also a $5 per person event. And it's UX and content, the power of process with Misty Weaver, new venue.
Cool.
So it might be interesting to check out over at Brain Station at 6 p.m. on Monday.
Cool. And then we have the Vancouver Polyglot Reading Group.
The Polyglot Reading Group. So where is this? Over at Demonware?
Yeah, Demonware, 369 Terminal Avenue.
Awesome. And it looks like this is an introduction to population protocols.
Yeah. So it's actually a PDF. You can read it. It's about 28 pages, kind of long. But yeah, it seems like a really interesting group. You definitely have to read the book before or read the document before you go. But if you're into multiple languages and learning all that, that's about all that stuff. Check it out.
Yeah. And then we have the Vancouver Linux User Group. They have a meeting at 7 p.m. and that's over at SFU 515 West Hastings mm-hmm. at 7 p.m. They say the room can change. So make sure to check in with the security there to see where it is. Mm-hmm. But the topic this time is the rise and fall of embedded Linux, or what the hell went wrong?
Yeah.
So it seems like it should be pretty interesting. I didn't know that anything had gone wrong with embedded Linux. I kind of thought it was everywhere.
Yeah.
But that'll be maybe an interesting meetup to go to, and it should be fun.
Okay, Tuesday, April 9th. April 19th, sorry.
So the Neural Tech X, they've got a meetup from, it looks like it's a pretty long one here, is from 3 p.m. to 7 p.m., and that's Neural Tech Hack Night.
Yeah.
And that's over at 2509 Main Street. It's up on the second floor.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. So they have a bunch of, I guess they're hacking on some hardware devices, so definitely check that out if you're into that.
Yeah, bring your tool set, maybe, if you got one.
Yeah, definitely. Cool. And then we have the Women Can Tech YVR.
Yeah, this looks pretty cool. This is at Build Direct, 401 West Georgia, same building that Unbounce is in, but it's up on the 19th floor. And this is coming up at 5:30 p.m., and the topic is Topic 3, Women in Tech Leadership.
Cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, we also have the Closure Hack Night. And for those who know, the show notes or the notes for the Vancouver Closure Hack Night are very simple. It's just Hack Night. Bring your computer. Check it out. It's at Code Core 142 West Hastings.
At 6 p.m.
Yeah.
And then I'm really looking forward to, I'm actually on the wait list. I think the one I'm going to go to that night is the Android Developers. It's over at Mobify, third floor, 948 Homer. And they've got a topic this time, React Native for Android Workshop. So definitely bring your laptop and your Android. It says if you don't have an Android device, install Genymotion or Genymotion, mm-hmm. probably Genymotion, free for individual use. So make sure to check that out.
Yeah, I guess you could also install the Android developer tools and get the emulator.
Well, this is what they've asked on their meetup page,
okay.
So I'd go with that. I would imagine you already have the Android tools
that makes
installed.
Sense, then.
So,
cool.
Yeah.
Cool. Jump Wednesday.
Mm-hmm.
All right, we have the Linux desktop meetups. This one's actually sort of has a resurgence, right?
Yeah, a resurgence, sure. I guess it's been going for a while, but the past couple of weeks, I think ever since Adam installed his Ubuntu with KDE on his Chromebook, he's been loving it again. So
cool.
Yeah, that should be pretty fun. 4:30 to 6:30 p.m. Show up if you've got a Linux desktop, and even if not, if you're just interested, maybe you want to try something out, you want to try out a live CD, you're not sure. Definitely a friendly group of people that would love to help you out. Maybe if you've got a MacBook and you wanted to install Arch Linux, that'd be the place to go.
Yeah, that's also at Decentral, Adam's favorite spot.
Yeah.
Cool. So we have the Vancouver Pluralsight Study Group with the building applications with React and Flux.
Yeah, and that's from 5:30 to 6:30 at PNI Digital Media Offices, 100-425 Carroll. Are you going to head out to that, James?
I think so. I keep seeing these, and I'm always so interested. I think I might have a class that day, but
yeah,
I think I can see it.
Building applications with React and Flux.
Yeah.
It looks like that should be pretty cool. I'd like to make it out to that, but I think I might.
All right. And then we have the Vancouver Scala meetup with the functional programming in Scala Reading Group.
Yeah, so I actually, it was interesting. I asked about this at the event I went to, the machine learning group, because they had one of the people who's organizing this, and I asked, you know, can you post where you actually are? It says on the meetup group, we will go through the exercises of one chapter every 2 weeks. The plan is to finish chapter 6 by the year, but I don't know if they are on this book, if they're still on that chapter. Maybe I'd have to reach out to somebody and ask, or just know. But they also said that they worked through all of the Coursera courses on Scala.
Cool.
So definitely reach out to some of the people there if you're interested in it, see where they're at, and see if you can jump in.
Last time we talked about this event, someone commented in the meetup. Mm-hmm. So they actually said, hey, we're on chapter 5 or whatever.
Sweet.
Cool.
But so anyway,
yeah, it'd be nice to see.
Still might want to reach out. So that might be chapter 6 then, if they were on chapter 5 last time.
Yeah.
And then we have the Ionic Vancouver.
Yes, Ionic Vancouver. So people that don't know, Ionic is a tool for doing cross-platform applications with Android and iOS and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. A lot like React Native, maybe a little bit different. If you've heard of it before,
it
you want to get into it. I think maybe it is. I'm not 100% sure. It just helps. It is a JavaScript framework, mm-hmm. so it does help build Android and iOS apps in a single code base. So I don't really know. So maybe I should check this out, because I've heard about it quite a bit.
So that looks pretty interesting. Anyway, and that's over at Lighthouse Labs, which is 350. That's the third floor, 128 West Hastings. Mm-hmm. So that's in Launch Academy.
Yeah,
should be pretty fun. Wednesday, 6 p.m. to 8 p.m.
Cool. Now, Thursday.
Yeah, so this is interesting. For those of you who were part of the Vancouver Ansible meetup, you may have noticed that there has been some rebranding here, and it's now the DDD, CQRS, ES practitioners. So DDD, domain-driven design or development.
I think they're interchangeable.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then CQRS, command query responsibility segregation,
mm-hmm.
and ES, so event sourcing practitioners.
Oh yeah, you're right. Event sourcing.
Or event store practitioners. What do you think?
Event sourcing, I think it's here.
Yeah.
Cool.
So this should be pretty awesome. And this one looks like this is 4:30 to 7 p.m. So that's quite a while. And it looks like this is talking about something Adam was telling me the other day. You know how you get a bunch of project managers together and they kind of write down their stories, and then that gets rewritten again and then translated by maybe dev managers, and then dev gets it and they start working on it. Well, this way they were like, you know, let's do our event storming, and let's kind of see what's going on and talk about it and get all these post-it notes. And then that event storming session, these post-it notes, that is your backlog. I was like, wow, really?
Cool.
So I don't know if that's exactly what this is about, but I think it might be somewhat along those lines. It seems like it should be pretty cool. Anyway.
Yeah, Adam's a busy boy this week.
Yeah, definitely.
All right, and the Vancouver Pixel Crafters brings us How We Build It Q&A with Startup Product Experts. So that one was cool because these people might not necessarily fit the mold of a product designer developer, because there's two CTOs and a CEO there.
The ticketed event. That's kind of interesting. So this is kind of two that you're bringing today that I would say don't necessarily fit.
Yeah, I thought this one maybe didn't, but then I would love to chat with a CTO, because these people are actually talking about how they build their apps and how they actually work. So how they actually designed and developed their companies from a technical perspective. So the CTO is talking about how did they manage their actual iOS accounting application. One person is talking about Voxtur, which is this IP transport system.
Mm-hmm.
And then another person is talking about Latergram, which is a tool for delaying posts to different social
networks. So you're saying it's a little bit more on the technical side. They'll maybe be talking about some of their tech stack and some of the decision choices that they made and how that affected it. So it might actually fall a lot more into our interests than you might think. Cool. Okay. We'll check it out.
Also at Launch Academy, 300, 128 West Hastings.
5:30 to 6:30 p.m. And we have the Learn Data Science event. Mm-hmm. So this one is the Kaggle competitions. Have you been out to any of these? And are you planning on making it out?
No, I haven't been out to any of these. But I talk to the people all the time. I talk to Charles and the other guy. I see them at meetups and chat with them about what they're doing. It sounds cool.
Yeah, by the other guy, you mean Bruce?
Yes, Bruce.
Yeah. So I'm hoping to make it out to this as well. This is at 1140 Pender Street, Suite 840, Cardinal Path, from 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. on Thursday, April 21st. And if I'm not mistaken, that's it for our week in meetups around town. All right, we're here with Neil and Omri from Skio Music. Thanks for being on.
Thank you for inviting us.
All right. So tell us a little bit about about yourself, first of all, and how you got involved with Skeel Music, and then we're going to ask about what Skeel Music is. So maybe just tell us a quick blurb about who each of you are. Neil?
Yeah, so I am a adventure junkie.
Adventure junkie.
Nice. Turned programmer.
Nice.
So started young, you know, software development through high school. Mm-hmm. Lived in Whistler, grew up there.
Oh, sweet.
And wow. Then, yeah, I went through university, master's degree, and yeah. Then straight into startups.
That's pretty cool. So what did you study?
So software engineering. Mm-hmm. And then master's in computer science, mm-hmm. Machine learning. So
machine learning. Ooh, cool.
Collaborative filtering algorithms, distributed processing. So
nice.
Solving really big problems.
Yep.
Across yeah. large clusters.
That's so. Pretty cool. That's awesome. So where'd you go to school?
At UVic.
Oh, cool. Yeah. So you stayed around this whole area the whole time, or at least for your beginning of your career?
Yeah, I spent a year in Ontario working mm-hmm. for two companies. Mm-hmm. And then, so I have, you know, been around a bit, but I love mm-hmm. Vancouver.
Yeah.
I'm just drawn to the mountains.
Sure.
And, yeah. That's yeah. pretty awesome. So maybe we'll get back to that about, like, the machine learning and talk about Skeel Music and what things are happening there. But Omri, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Yeah, thanks. I'm one of the co-founders as well, as Neil is. I came more from the music background. I'm a DJ producer. I went to UVic as well, but I studied political science, like every good producer
should.
You know, at some point along the line, I think politics sort of, you know, didn't do it for me, and my music career started, you know, gaining traction, and I mm-hmm. saw that it was able to bring people together, and really just my life philosophies lined up better with music. And nice. Eventually my brother, who's mm-hmm. the CEO, he's a copyright lawyer.
Yep.
And so, you know, technology, music, and law all kind of combined with us nice. Three. And that's really the origins of where Skeel came from. So
cool. Okay, cool. So that actually leads in pretty well to Skeel Music. What is Skeel Music?
Yeah, it's actually a collaboration platform and a licensing marketplace mm-hmm. Sort of rolled into one, where music creators can come and get the rights directly from the content owners, so mm-hmm. record labels, publishers, to remix and sample their content. They can find other creators to collaborate with, and the whole purpose is to really make some of the most painful parts of doing business in music as easy as possible and painless as possible for the creators.
Right.
So getting legal work done. Mm-hmm. We have, you know, really smart guys building a technological solution to really simplify a lot of the complex legal work.
Mm-hmm.
So what type of complex legal work might you face? So let's say I'm a musician and I come to Skeel Music. What would the process look like?
Yeah, if you're a music creator, you would come and you'd be able to browse through a library of songs, find something that inspires you, mm-hmm. and reach out directly to the record label that controls the rights to that content to be able to remix or sample that. On the other side, you might be able to find a vocalist or another producer or mm-hmm. a musician that you'd like to work with, and, you know, start getting your rights in order for whatever you do create with that person.
That's pretty cool. Versus what if I just take that and remix it myself anyway?
Yeah, I mean, this is a huge issue in the industry right now. What you're touching on is a bigger problem of solving copyright infringement and piracy.
Right.
And one of the things that's kind of happening in the industry is technology like Shazam is pushing everything in the direction of tracking and infringement mm-hmm. And taking it down. And, you know, you could go ahead and do that, but there's a good chance that if something will flag it on YouTube or SoundCloud and you won't be able to actually promote it and commercialize that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and one of the things we learned, you know, in tech is that people are willing to pay for content. That's mm-hmm. why, you know, Netflix and that is so successful.
Right.
And so we're basically taking, that ease of access, the way people want to work with it and buy it, mm-hmm. and moving that into, you know, the actual licensing, the business of doing music.
Right. Mm.
That's cool. How do I get my music on Skeel Music? If I have a label or I have a song that's already maybe out there and I want people to remix it, how do I go about that?
Yeah, it's free to actually go there and create a profile. Just go to skeelmusic.com, set up an account, similar to the way you would upload content to your YouTube channel or your SoundCloud page. If you own the content, if you own the rights to that.
Right.
If you're a record label and you have a lot more content, you know, come talk to us. We have an accounts program where we help you get set up and
cool. And
work with that content.
That does sound pretty awesome. So Neil, why don't you tell us a little bit about the tech stack and some of the choices behind why you chose what you chose?
Well, I mean, ultimately a tech stack is based on people. Mm-hmm. So what I did is I looked at what were sort of the mature popular technologies, and at the time AngularJS and Python. and Django in the back end. Mm-hmm. There were a number of competing frameworks, all with trade-offs.
Right.
And, you know, that was actually the one we just chose to use.
So that's interesting. These days, I think in the community, there's some voices that are kind of anti-framework, and they're kind of speaking up quite a bit lately. Mm-hmm. But there's a lot of people using a lot of frameworks for a lot of reasons. But why go with a framework like Django over maybe no framework?
It gives a starting point. Mm-hmm. It's not a perfect solution. They never fit all cases.
Right.
It's designed for its use case, and it lets you prototype quickly. Mm-hmm. You know, we already have a ton of instances where we've had to move past the framework and build our own tech. But you know, I thought it was easier to pick a framework to begin with, find out what our use cases were, learn more, and as we iterate, we replace the pieces that need it.
Are you happy with that decision of starting with maybe a strong base and then building on these other pieces as you need them, or as you said, going beyond the framework?
It goes both ways. There's instances where, we fight with the framework. It just does things that don't work. On the other side, the framework just made things so quick. You get a prototype up in no time, as long as you work within its constraints, they generally work very well.
Cool.
So it's just a matter of kind of balancing those trade-offs for, speed of iteration?
Exactly. Yeah. One of the things we're working on now is making it so our code is modular enough to be able to change the execution environment, be it an Amazon Lambda function, a REST call to some API, running locally, concurrently, sort of a standard interface for all those different execution types.
Cool. Right. So that sounds really interesting. So is this, is it a single monolithic sort of application that you're working on, or do you have multiple services? Or
no, it's heavily distributed, multiple services. Okay. One of our philosophies is anything that is heavily read, we generally try to put in S3. Just bake it down to JSON, leave it there.
Okay.
That way, as you browse the site, there's very little load on the APIs at all.
Oh, that's really smart. That's cool. Yeah, I didn't even really think about that. Right. Those files that don't change, just throw them as a file. Chuck them in S3.
Because you know when they change, because you've saved it. And
yeah.
So when you do that, you just chuck it in S3, and basically you can throw the internet at it, and as long as S3 stays up, it works.
That sounds pretty cool. Yeah. What about your deploys? How is that managed?
It's a growing process. There's a lot of new tech that we're trying to use, and you have to balance.
Right.
Currently deploying to, say, Lambda functions, the tools haven't caught up.
Right.
So you can't, baking all the requirements, the libraries, and that, there isn't an easy way of doing that yet.
Yeah. I remember it was, about a year ago, Jeff Barr from Amazon came, and he was talking at the old Unbounce office, so they were still over on the other side, on Hastings and Dunsmuir or Pender, I think. I think he just talked a little bit about Lambdas, and it was still that functionality wasn't available yet, I think. So how do you find that? How do you find using Lambda functions on Amazon?
It's a cool idea. In essence, it's a bit like an RPC.
Right.
Like if you actually want to step back, it's just a remote function that you can invoke, and you don't have to worry about the load balancing to the same extent. You can kind of, you tune the parameters, and it's like a true microservice.
Right.
You have one function.
Right.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. Yeah, I wanted to ask about how do the artists get paid, and how do the labels get paid, and what's the whole situation with that? So you have these users that posted their music, you have artists that are having their music sold. How's the payments work? How do the artists make money here?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think the payments and the complex things that happen on the back end of our system is really where the value is. So if you think of an Airbnb type marketplace where you could interact with somebody you've never met before, even rent their apartment, put a payment down, and you're not worried about getting that money or that person receiving the money. And on the other end, they're not never having to chase that down. So on Skio, when two parties are doing a deal, if there's money involved, if there's a budget and a transaction happening, we collect that up front. The deal gets funded. Then the creator gets access to the audio files. And once the terms are set and the contract is kind of finalized, the easy interface spits out a full multi-page contract on the back end.
So, yeah, that's really interesting. I went about a month and a half ago. I went to Japan and used Airbnb for the first time.
Okay,
and it wasn't. It was really, like you said. I mean, it was pretty easy. I didn't have to worry about the money. I felt like I could trust the people because I trusted Airbnb.
Right.
That's really neat. Yeah.
So how does the budget? You said they mentioned there was a budget or a price. So is it a fixed price, a budget, a range of prices? How does all that work? How does all the pricing work?
Yeah, you're on with the great questions. One of the things that we always, again, one of our philosophies is we're not trying to make these deals for the content owners or the creators. We just sort of put them in touch with each other to be able to make the deal. And similar to Airbnb, I'll use that example again. They're not telling you how much to list your apartment for. They might be able to tell you what the best price is that people are actually buying and when it might be too much, or what the other prices in that area are. And we can do similar things with Neil's, you know, technology to kind of see which content is being interacted with the most and which markets and what price point. But again, that's totally up to the content owner to just say, what are the terms of this deal? And we've seen money go both ways, actually. So we've seen record labels pay artists to solicit, commission them to work on new remixes and new content for them, and they're signing that content and releasing it on their label. And then we've also seen, you know, producers in their bedrooms want to look for a great track to remix and put up on their SoundCloud page without worrying about it getting taken down. So they'll pay a few bucks to a label to just get the rights to legally remix something or
something. So do you have a price range that typically things run? Because you've mentioned the basement person and then the label commissioning. Those, I guess, are radically different budgets as far as, you know, what the cost would be. So how does that work?
You know, I'd say from the perspective of the creators, the artists and producers that are coming on and buying the rights from the labels, those are typically between $5 and $80. But when we see a record label actually come and commission work from one of the creators, we've seen that go anywhere from $150 to $3,000, $5,000.
Okay, cool.
And you know, these are professionals. The other factor to consider is we do deal with music professionals in our pro tier, and we deal with kind of up and coming guys in our rising tier. Right. And so all along that spectrum of independent amateur bedroom producers to major label signed artists, major record label, major independent artists that are distributing worldwide. So
that does sound pretty neat. I'm wondering a little bit about, I guess some of the problems. What are some of the problems that you're solving with code, or what are some of the interesting challenges you're having? And also, I'm not sure if this is one of them, but I guess money. If you're processing transactions or storing cash or holding it in escrow, I guess in a sense, how does that work? Or you know, how do you ensure things are secure?
Well, let's start with sort of how the code is helping the problem. One of the big challenges we're solving is we're taking these complex legal agreements and making them understandable. And you know, you have to be very careful. You know, you can't give legal advice, so it has to be understandable. There's a ton of constraints, and it makes it a really interesting technical challenge. And then you have to output the, you know, these legally binding documents afterwards.
Right.
And so, yeah, that's tough. So obviously, having the lawyer as part of your team is great. So how does that work with? Is there a challenge between working with that legal stuff and working with the technology and trying to output a proper contract without messing up? What are some things that are common things you had to come over or get over as far as that goes?
In those pieces, the big thing is being rigorous with unit testing and really, you know, setting it up so that we have checks all the way along. And then, you know, before things get released, you need to do the legal reviews. Make sure that, you know, everything is legally correct.
Right.
Okay, so eventually you want to reduce the legal reviews by maybe building up this, you know, ideal contract, or is that the goal, or is there some other, are you always going to have that manual legal review there?
You know, we're going to be continuously adding more complex legal agreements. We've actually started with one of the most simple types. Like copyright licensing is a huge, you know, black hole for the music industry.
Sure.
One of the biggest problems is that it is inaccessible, right? You need a legal degree to understand contracts, or you need a lawyer. So we've made it very simple for the artist to understand that. And as we add in more types of complexity to our deals that have publishers involved and more types of creators getting in there, we're going to have, you know, more challenges solving those problems from a technical perspective. And I think we're always going to have, you know, top-down legal inspection on what we're doing, because it needs to meet the standard of what's acceptable out there.
And is that an international standard, or is that
in some ways we're sort of following suit with what's already out there, and in other ways we're actually pushing that boundary. We're doing things that haven't been done in legal and music and tech in a lot of ways. So we have an opportunity to kind of define that boundary, which is pretty crazy to think about.
Definitely.
So,
So Neil, you mentioned unit tests, and I'm just wondering, so are you a TDD practitioner, or is this an after the fact testing, or do you have separate departments?
I tend to take a pragmatic approach and a very iterative approach to these things. There are a whole slew of techniques you can use. And basically, you know, say if you take, you know, generating a contract. There's multiple layers. You know, you collect the data, the terms, this, you know, and different rendering points, and we test along those layers. you know, the test driven is great when you know before you go in exactly what needs to be there.
Right. And so I think at the same time, you could maybe say testing after the fact is great because now you already have something there. Or not, maybe not as great because you already have something and you're testing, kind of writing self-fulfilling tests in a way. How do you balance that? So I guess obviously you're trying to write tests that are meaningful for what you're doing as well, right?
Well, I think when you can identify testable pieces ahead of time and you have the answer, because oftentimes we're iterating with the lawyers and they're like, can, you know, does this work? Does this meet this requirement? So you test where you can, and then as you go, you're continually improving it.
Right.
You know, to catch regressions or that. But in essence, you're adding and removing and modifying clauses. And,
yeah, they're pretty complex. I mean, when I did my incorporation or my partnership agreement with my co-founder, it was so confusing. And adding stuff in and moving stuff around, some stuff's conflicting when you have two of the same sort of deal. It just gets crazy. So are you guys picking up that law side? Are you able to like talk a little bit more about contracts? Is that helping you with your own, running your own day-to-day lives with understanding this legal stuff?
Building this company has been a huge eye-opener for all of us.
Sure.
Knowing that our CEO is the one with the law degree, we've sort of all had to level up when it comes to legal knowledge and, you know, sort of what the best way to understand some of these complexities are. We definitely rely heavily on the experts here. One of the things that we do in our team is sort of, one of the things that's great about our team is that everybody's coming with their own sort of set of expertise and skill sets that can contribute to, you know, building something this complex. So
right.
Neil meets, you know, he brings the skills that kind of help us facilitate these deals from a technological perspective.
Right.
There's a lot of problem solving that happens on the legal side before it even hits the technology. And same with our business model.
We also try not to just use technology as a cure-all. Mm-hmm. Oftentimes the solution, say if you had conflicting clauses, is to go push back on the lawyers, talk to them, see if there's a way of writing the contract in a simpler way.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, one of our first iterations, we actually had an appendix at the bottom where we listed the terms and the contract would just reference that because initially that was the easiest way to do it.
Right. Right.
Because the contract stayed fixed and then now we've moved to a much more organic contract where the information is actually put in as we have a greater understanding of the problems and how to add and remove these clauses.
That's crazy. Is there an opportunity to use some of that machine learning background in this sort of building of the contracts or even as Omri said, recommendations for maybe pricing or anything like that?
Building the contracts would be really difficult because it has to be binding. You want it to be correct. There's different types of machine learning. Are you training off of a model? Are you trying to predict? You don't want those quirks that we've all seen in machine learning appearing.
Right. Yeah.
Where the machine learning really would come in is on the front end.
Mm-hmm.
It's putting people together, finding songs that are similar. You know, if you're looking for a particular style of female vocalist, that's where machine learning shines.
Cool. Okay, that's awesome. So you're actually maybe analyzing the music or the soundtrack or whatever you want to call it, or even the single instrument, and actually applying a genre or a style or matching that with a similar piece of music.
Exactly.
Cool.
So how long has Skio Music been around?
We've been building this for about 2 years, 2.5 years.
Mm-hmm. And how many people on the team?
We're close to 20 full-time staff now, actually.
Close to 20. Yeah. Wow, that's pretty cool. And what does the development team look like?
About 5 engineers right now.
Mm-hmm.
I've hired very carefully. Generally, you know, waiting to find the right talent, the right fit.
Mm-hmm.
Done a lot of mentorship. So we will take some of the star students from the universities and then spend a year mentoring them.
Right.
And many of them have, you know, even after their internships, have chosen to join the company and continue on.
Mm-hmm.
So you guys do internships as well. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
So we work with the universities. Both as far as there's the actual co-op programs.
Mm.
And so you take a student who's, generally around third year, and we bring them in and we teach them the craft of writing software.
Sure.
You know, they've learned the theory, we teach the craft.
Right. Yeah.
And so.
Yeah. How have you found that? Experience with maybe you could speak about some of the universities that have been really outstanding in your mind?
I may be biased, but definitely UVic has one of the top programs in software engineering in the country.
It
seems like there's a lot of really interesting things coming out of Victoria in general and just like the whole Techtoria. I hear it's very DevOps forward as well. Sorry, please continue.
Yeah, no, one of my friends from university started Send With Us, which is an email sending framework, basically for A/B testing emails. They take the whole templating problem off companies' hands, and they've been hugely successful.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the BC startup scene has really helped to foster that. You know, we're starting to see the larger companies come in, which is a bit of a pull on resources, but at the same time, that's what gives us our support. It's, you know, the people that work at Microsoft, they get the ideas, they get that itch to solve a problem, and then they go off and start a startup.
Right. This has been a common thread sort of with the last few guests about, like, what's the hiring situation like in BC? Our past guest, Ilya, was talking, saying that in the next 3 or 4 years, there's going to be 15,000 people shortage in the tech industry as far as these maybe these jobs goes. Or even if, imagine some new industry pops up in the tech sphere, maybe machine learning goes crazy, VR goes crazy, and these technical people, you know, even it's even worse than 15,000. Do you see anything that can combat that, or how do you guys sort of see that working out for you guys?
What I've seen, one of our biggest draws is people want to solve interesting problems, things that matter to them. So people who are interested in music understand those problems, want to work on them. And I think there's always going to be a space in startups for people that have that passion beyond just writing lines of code. You know, it's really interesting watching this sort of ecosystem develop around Skio. We're currently running a remix competition for a band that was one of our early deals.
Cool.
You know,
that sounds awesome. Sounds pretty cool. So is Skio self-funded?
No, we have investment. We've been, we're constantly sort of raising as needed. You know, we, again, that those are questions that our CEO would normally address. We typically defer to that. You know?
Sure.
But I think it's certainly been a challenge to be a music company and a tech company from Vancouver. Funding for us has been come from Europe, from the States. There's all kinds of pressures to continue to go down to Silicon Valley and court down there, and even locate our business to either LA or New York or London, where the music industry is sort of based.
We've had a lot of conversation about, you know, companies moving to San Francisco or in maybe the music case, LA. And it kind of seems like one of the major, I guess, most compelling reasons to do so is to be closer to your investors.
Exactly.
You know, just proximity and all that.
I think we're very lucky in that our investors and advisors not only believe in the team that we have to accomplish this and solve these problems, but believe in what we're doing and are excited and passionate about it and want to enable us to continue to succeed at that. And we have shown quite a bit of traction and success as we're continuing here. We're just really getting to that tipping point where this could really emerge as something that could put Vancouver on the map or continue to.
Cool. So if I wanted to reach out and talk to someone from Skio, maybe interested in working there or investing there, what would be a way to go about that?
Well, I mean, we've got a great new office space right beside Meat and Bread in Gastown. So, you know, we're happy to have people drop by, especially, you know, prospective tech employees, that sort of thing. Just come by, check out the space. You know, we've got a studio jam room there. It's really an interesting space.
That's cool. Yeah, you actually had me by there a while ago. So that's right by, right between Meat and Bread and Being Around the World on Cambie, just off Hastings there, right?
Yeah, just on the corner.
Really cool office space. So we're actually doing, not this week, but next week, we'll have the Hacker Nest there as well, right?
Yeah, yeah. Oh, really cool. Excited to have you guys there.
So that should be a really good time to kind of open up and show Vancouver Ski out.
Yeah. You mentioned the event about the sort of the band that first joined you and you're sort of doing an event around them. Or do you have any other of those planned, or how can someone get involved in that event?
Yeah, totally. I think because we do have such a great space, it's big. We have a music studio. It's very creative in there. There's lots of good energy. We want to share that with not just the music industry, but the tech industry. So having you guys come in is going to be great for us. I think everybody in our company is excited to you know, host that type of event. We encourage everyone who wants to come check it out or be interested or who's interested in it to come by.
It's definitely a cool space. So we're really excited about it.
We're also doing that with the music industry. So we've partnered with a local music collective called Chapel Sound. They have a festival coming up on May long weekend, I believe May 20th, 22nd. Nice. And we'll be doing a day of workshops at our office of music panels and workshops where it's actually really interesting. There's going to be some music and art installations where people combine technology to create music.
Sure.
And very cool. That's also part of it.
How do people get involved in that?
You know, I believe they're still announcing different phases of their lineup, so I don't want to really jump the gun. But, you know, for sure, keep tabs on what we're doing with Skio. We'll be talking about it as we get more information and we're allowed to talk about it. And, you know, check out our website, check out our socials, and by all means, stop by the office and come say hi. We've always got people down there.
Sounds good. All right. So, Neil, I know I've met you a couple of times at the HackerNest Tech Social. What other events might we expect to see either of you at?
HackerNest is one I go to regularly,
right.
But in others, I just like to actually sample different ones. Mm-hmm. I also spend a lot of time with the mountaineering community.
Nice.
And so, you know, the Alpine Club of Canada and that. And so...
Very cool. I went to the machine learning meetup this week, and that was pretty awesome. I think you should have been there.
Yeah. No, music events, the music combining technology events or meetups that are coming around?
Yeah, I mean, other than the Chapel Sound Festival, I think that's what's next on our plate. We will be hosting events in our space, and we're working with a number of people to try to kind of put those together. Mm-hmm. So we'll let you guys know as they come up.
And we'll make sure to announce it on the podcast. Yeah. So really looking forward to seeing you at SKIO for the HackerNest.
Yeah, what was the date of that?
That is going to be Monday, April 25th, or is it 30th?
The last Monday of the month, right?
It's the last Monday of the month.
Okay, we'll do that. All right, great. Thanks, Omri. Thanks, Neil. We'll definitely check out SKIO Music.
Yeah, thanks for being on the podcast.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah, thanks for having us, guys.
Thanks for listening to another episode of
VancouverTechPodcast.ca. That's our site. You can actually email us, too, at show@VancouverTechPodcast.ca.
Or find us in the YVR Dev Slack. I'm at Drew.
I'm at James.
We're almost always online.
You can actually get an invite to YVR Dev Slack if you haven't got one already at yvrdev.herokuapp.com.
See you there.
Bye.